Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Joyful, joyful.
You're in the Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9 with the
Priest,
the Pom,
and the Poof.
This is the show where we talk about spirituality and sexuality for our community. Good evening and welcome to the Spirit Lounge. And the three P's are no... Well, they're not three P's, they're two P's tonight. The Priest is taking a well-earned break. And Priesty, if you're listening, darling, have a glass of wine for me down the Great Ocean Road. So it's the Pom and the Poof tonight, and we are joined by Jake Bartlett, who's a travel counsellor. And Jake is going to share with us his own spiritual journey, plus talk to us about spiritual places in Australia and New Zealand. So tonight is all about spiritual journeys, spiritual places. So if you have a favourite spiritual place that you've been to, that you'd like to tell us about, feel free to contact us on 0427 JOY 949 on air at joy.org.au is the email, or you can call us on 1300 JOY 949. We'd love to hear from you about your spiritual places. Let's kick off with a lesser known track by Michael Jackson called History.
Joy 94.9,
and you're on the Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9 with the Pom and the Poof, and the Priest is taking a well earned rest and a big bottle of wine.
Hopefully not that big a bottle of wine, but just maybe one or two drinks. Responsible. Be responsible.
Now, we are going to be talking about spiritual places, spiritual journeys, spiritual destinations. If you are into all of that, please let us know. Share, if you want to share, do with us, because we'd love to hear about them. I know some people find such fabulous places they don't want to tell anyone because they want to keep them all to themselves.
Or it might just be a place that's spiritual to you, and maybe other people might just walk past that place and not even know that it's a spiritual place for
exactly.
You. We'd love to know about that, actually. If you want to send us a text, it's 0427-JOY-949, or give us a call, 1300-JOY-949, or email onair at joy.org.au.
Fantastic. So we're talking to Jake Bartlett tonight, and who is a travel counsellor in his own right, but a very spiritual person who has had a great spiritual journey through life so far, as well as being an expert in spiritual destinations. Welcome to the studio.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here.
It's good to see you.
Yeah.
Now, let's get to know a little bit about you before we talk about all those other places in the world.
Mm.
Did you have a particularly religious or spiritual upbringing?
Not at all, actually. My parents were far from religious, but, you know, very people of great heart. But I just recognised, looking back, a deep longing from a very early age, you know. And it's sort of a bit of a cliche, this sort of thing of longing. But looking back over my teenage years into my early youth, there was this deep longing. And I look back to this whole wonderful series of events that led me to, you know, what I would call my spiritual awakening. So
yeah. Longing for what? Did you know what you were longing for?
Not particularly. I recognised what the longing was more when I reached my teenage years, because I wanted to know what those bigger questions were. Because I remember getting to about 16 and being incredibly depressed, just thinking there's got to be more to life than this. You know, just going and getting a job and, you know, getting married, even though then I was struggling with sexuality, so I knew that was something that I didn't particularly wanted to do. So and I just really went through this dilemma of there has to be something bigger than all of this. And I came across some of you may have heard the book Way of the Peaceful Warrior. It was actually made into a movie, Dan Millman's book. And I came across that book when I was a teenager and all the light bulbs just started to come on. So all the questions looking back my early youth, I had reading that book was all just starting to fall into place.
That's amazing how one book can do that.
Yeah, I felt so much gratitude from reading that book. I actually just wanted to write Dan Millman a letter and just thank him because it was such a turning point in my life, reading that book. It was
fantastic.
Extraordinary.
Now, it wasn't your sister or your cousin or somebody quite influential in helping you?
Yeah, in the early years, because my parents were religious at all, so I was my cousin got into Christianity when I was probably about 7 or 8, and I started to do Bible correspondence courses. So my parents would look in the room and think, "Oh my!" I was like, "What on earth is he doing?
He's doing his homework.
Where did he get that from?" But here, I was so dedicated to these Bible correspondence courses because for me, not that I particularly resonated with Christianity as a religion, but it was just this sense of there's something greater, and I was just soaking it up because it just all, you know, just seemed like it was going to answer the questions that I had. And that really was the impetus that sort of continued to fold and unfold into my teenage years. And then, you know, coming across Way of the Peaceful Warrior and other things which led me to my spiritual journey further on.
Just briefly, because I haven't read this book, Way of the Peaceful Warrior, just in a nutshell, what is it about?
You know, funny you say that. You know, I can't even quite remember the whole the crux of it at the moment, but it was one of those sort of spiritual journey books where it talks about, it's sort of a way of a pilgrim. It's a bit of a similar to Paulo Coelho's books. People may be familiar with those as well. And
okay.
Even like Shirley MacLaine books for those that are into those. And I read a couple of her books at that time. You know, that sort of sense that there is this other thing that's greater than us, but at the same time, it is who we are in essence.
Mm-hmm.
It is our source.
Mm.
But it's a way of connecting in with that. So, reading that book, it was just like, yes, it was like on some deeper level, I was resonating with that truth. I knew that there was reason to it, but I didn't quite grasp what it was at the time. But I guess it's like they talk about us as energetic beings, as a certain vibration. And I feel like tuning into those books was, you know, working out that vibration. So I guess my body was just sort of soaking it up, and I just totally resonated with, you know, that at that time, and led me to more and more of a quest and a search.
Hmm.
Yeah, did that lead you into exploring meditation, or what kind of practices did that lead to?
Yeah, well, at those stages, it was literally just a quest. And then when I got to my later teens, I through a great series of events, I actually ended up in a meditation ashram in Sydney where my brother and I were living together in Sydney at the time when I was a, you know, late teen. And it was a fantastic time because my brother's was coming out at the same time. So we're living together and just having this sort of great, you know, exploratory time with, you know, the Sydney gay scene, and there was so all sort of going on.
It runs in the family.
Yeah. Well, yeah, my brother's, well, he's married now, but totally threw us off.
Okay.
He's happily married now with 2 kids. But he at that time was looking, you know, similar sort of spiritual search.
Mm-hmm.
And through a close mutual friend of ours, we ended up at this ashram in Sydney. That's really where my spiritual journey began as I see it now. But at the same time, I totally acknowledge all those amazing things, all those stepping stones to that point.
Mm-hmm.
So that was really, yeah, when the light bulbs fully came on for me.
So what ancient Indian philosophies did you draw your inspiration from?
Well, coming across this meditation path that I follow, it draws its inspiration from, it's an ancient Indian path that draws its philosophies from Kashmir Shaivism and the Shiva Sutras and Vedanta and things like that. So it's really ancient Indian scriptural texts, which are put into a way that's very accessible for us in this modern age. And the beautiful thing, you know, meditation is such a practical tool. It doesn't have to be this really esoteric, new agey sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
For me, it's been a great tool just for modern and worldly day life, you know, in our busyness of getting solely engrossed in, you know, a lot of things, we can easily lose track and lose sight of our center, you know, when we get very stressed in our work and things like that. So for me, meditation and discovering meditation through that was literally just a way of coming back to my source on a daily basis. Mm. I meditate every day. It's become a foundation of my life.
Mm.
And the days that I don't allow time for it, or if I get rushed, I notice how that has a massive impact on my day.
Heard that before from other guests. We'll continue with your journey just in a minute.
Joy 94.9.
You're on Joy 94.9 in the Spirit Lounge on a Tuesday night.
Here we are lounging around with our cocktails.
We are lounging around and we've got Jake Bartlett with us. Now, Jake, the track that we just played, it's very special to you. Tell me.
Yeah, that's a track from an old school friend of mine, Victoria Redwood. So she's a budding country music star and she's just launching her career, and I just discovered that track on Facebook the other day when she posted it. So it's available on iTunes. It's called Open Doors, and I believe her full album is coming out soon too. So go, Victoria. If you like the track, check it out on iTunes.
Fantastic. Yeah. Now, back to what we're actually talking about. You were telling us that you got really into this meditation. You actually studied meditation at an ashram in New York. Can you tell us a bit more about what that was like?
Yeah, absolutely. When I got into meditation, I was actually a professional musician at the time, and I was in a band in Brisbane, and we were doing a lot of recording and touring, and it was what I always thought I wanted to do with my life. From a very early age, I was a drummer from a very early age, and so here I was in my late teens, early 20s, finally doing what I wanted to do and thought it was going to bring me all the happiness and joy that I always sort of did. Mm-hmm. And of course, as it is, when we look for joy in things outside of ourselves, it often comes up dry. So anyway, I had this morning coming back from this tour that we'd done and was just feeling this incredible emptiness inside, thinking, well, hang on, this is what I thought was going to give me complete fulfillment, and I'm feeling totally empty, so what's going on here? And it was literally within a couple of days that I received a phone call to go to the meditation ashram in New York, which is a sister ashram, I guess you'd say, to the one I was in Sydney. So I went and told my band members that I was leaving, and they were just mortified. They said, what on earth? And it's funny, at the time, this Brisbane Music newspaper put an article in about me leaving and saying I'm going to meditate on a mountaintop, and it was just it was hysterical.
That would be like you getting to the final of The Voice or X Factor, wouldn't it? And suddenly, I'm off now. Bye, guys.
Yeah, well, you know, here I was just thinking I've, you know, achieved everything I wanted to achieve. And the band was, you know, we were really starting to get some strides. We just planned a tour for the rest of Australia. And so they were just like, you can't be doing this. But I knew with such certainty that I had to do it. So it was a total leap of faith. And I just thought, I just got to go and do this because, and looking back now, I'm so glad I did. It was a massive turning point in my life. And so I went off and started to live a life in an ashram, which is similar, I guess, to a monastery. It's a very disciplined daily schedule. And it was the most extraordinary period of my life. And I've been back at different times. And yeah, it was incredible. So
was it? Because it's hard to imagine a monastery in New York, really? Well, I mean, those words don't really... was it in Manhattan?
It was upstate New York, yeah. Okay. So New York State. So it's in a beautiful area, and it's surrounded by nature and things like that. So, yeah, it was a place that, you know, you go for a spiritual retreat and to come back to your center. And so it was a really, you know, powerful period for me in terms of, I was talking about light bulbs coming on in my teenage years.
Yeah.
Light bulbs were exploding at this point in my life, you know, in terms of the bigger questions and, just starting to get more of a sense of truly who I was and my greater goals and things in life.
So how long did you stay in New York for?
I was there for probably only 3 months at that time because I really wanted to go to India. That was my whole thing because there's a main ashram in India. So I went off and spent a little bit of time in New York purely to prepare myself to India because it was obviously a much more intense, more disciplined sort of schedule and things like that.
And this is when you had said goodbye to possible fame and fortune to be a monk in India.
I was so certain that I was going to do that. I felt that was my calling. I told my family, I'm off. I may not come back. I sold up everything. I sold my drum kit. I sold my car. I sold everything.
How did they react? Did they all just think you're completely mad?
Well, I've been very blessed with my parents. Not only were they've always been, you know, very supportive and accepting of everything throughout my life. Yeah. And so, I think with a bit of apprehension, just wondering what on earth I was doing. But at the same time, I think they knew that it was very important to me to follow this path.
You had the calling.
And I had the calling. So it was just, I've got to go and do this. And
So describe your first impressions when you got to India.
Manic. My goodness. It's India is one of the most extraordinary places on earth. I mean, the first thing you're confronted with is the poverty. You know, it's just, it's mind blowing. And It's one of those countries that gives you a whole perspective on life. You know, I've never, or, you know, in terms of a sense, we should really never complain about anything again, as long as we should live when you visit a country like, sure, like India. It was just the conditions that people live in, you just cannot believe. Mm. And, you know, the degrees of poverty, and, you know, you can be staying at a lovely, you know, 5-star hotel by the airport and looking out your window, and there's literally, you know, there's people just living in extreme poverty.
Shanty town.
Can't imagine, yeah. So, and, you know, but at the same time, the human spirit there is extraordinary. I mean, on the drive up to the ashram, you know, you're passing these little makeshift shanty towns, and these little kids are coming out for school, and they're so beautifully groomed, and they got their little backpacks on, and they got a smile on their face. So they got absolutely nothing, but they come across with such a beautiful human spirit.
So if you could pinpoint one thing that you took away from your experience in India, what would your takeaway be?
It was that thing where I was like saying, you know, with my music and thinking all that I was looking for outside myself is going to bring me joy. For the first time in my life, I realized that to have that full satisfaction, it has to come from inside. And being in India and having my time there, it was not only a theoretical sort of experience or something I'd written, it was a direct experience of what I was looking for. So it totally transformed my whole awareness of being and understanding of things. So it was extraordinary. So that was, I guess, so, and I realized, to answer your question, it was to come out and realize that ultimately everything is within inside myself. And so to come back now and get involved with music and that, it's been, not that I've done that yet, because the ironic thing was that I came back from my time in India and my whole passion for music had actually gone. So it was like it was this sense of purification of becoming true to what I really, really wanted.
Fascinating story. We're going to hear more about your journey just in a second. We'd like to say hi to Chris quickly. We've had a lovely email in from him or her. I've just been to the Peace Park in Hiroshima in Japan. It's a very powerful, emotional and sobering place. It's very spiritual and yet somewhat positive. Therefore, for me, very spiritual. I'm not a religious person usually. Thank you, Chris. Thank you very much. Lovely to hear from you.
If you do have a story like Chris, send us a SMS 0427 Joy949, or send us an email onair@joy.org.au. We would love to know what your spiritual places are.
Joy 94.9.
And you're on the Spirit Lounge with the Pom and the Puff and No Priest, who is keeping the wine business flowing on the Great Ocean Road. Good evening.
Single-handedly.
Good evening, Priesty, if you're listening. Now, we're having a fab show because we have Jake with us, who not only has the most fascinating spiritual journey through his life so far of his own, but also is a bit of an expert on spiritual destinations and journeys around the world, because during the day he is a travel counsellor. So, Jake, first of all, tell us, that was Kelly Clarkson. Why did you pick that track?
Well, I saw Kelly in concert last night at Rod Laver Arena, and she was extraordinary. And that was one of my favourite tracks from her new album, Stronger. And I was delighted when she sang that last night. And my goodness, the woman has an extraordinary voice. So, yeah, I just thought we'd play that one of my favourite tracks.
She was an X Factor winner in the US, wasn't she?
American Idol, yeah.
Oh, American Idol.
About 10 years ago.
She was one of the first ones. She was the first one that had to really like make it herself after the talent quiz had finished, you know.
Yeah, cool. Totally. And she's really stood on her
nice
own.
Nice track.
So, yeah, it's great.
So let's transport ourselves back, all the way back to the ashram in rural India. Now, how long did you spend there?
I was there for 2.5 years all up.
Just a long time.
Yeah. I went originally for 6 months and it just extended and extended. Yeah, it was.
So I'm fascinated by this because I've only been to India once and I certainly haven't been to a monastery. A winery perhaps, but not a monastery. Describe a typical day in the ashram.
It's incredibly disciplined, but at the same time it's just profoundly centering, I guess, would one way of putting it. I mean, the great thing is there's no distractions, there's no TVs, there's no newspapers, there's no radio, there's no nothing. So you totally disconnect from the world in that sense. I mean, if there was updates of major things that we should know about, like when there was major events going on in Mumbai or Bombay, they'd post them on. So we were just, you know, aware of things that were absolutely necessary. But the goal there is for you to connect within yourself and to, you know, to let go of all your worldly sort of thoughts and desires and things like that. So, incredibly disciplined life. Most mornings I was up at 3 a.m. And, you know, there's morning, you know, prayers and chanting and meditation, and then, you know, exercise. And, you know, it's a very disciplined, balanced life. And everyone offers volunteer work while they're there, and it could be a whole gamut of different things, whatever's required to keep everything running.
And did you spend a lot of time on your own?
Yes. Yes, you do, because you find your own, you know, little retreat spots, even though I was living in sort of dormitory accommodation. Mm-hmm. So that sort of ranged to being in a room with, you know, four or five other people. And then, and obviously separate men's and women's accommodation, which is a bit of a challenge because you're young gay men, so you're supposed to be put in a room whole for the men to let go of your distractions. And
yes, it's a bit funny that they separate men and women, isn't it? It doesn't work necessarily. It's a bit like at the Olympic Games, isn't
it? Yeah, so that was a bit of a burn. Because obviously, you know, when you're in a place like that too, the things that you need to work on, or, you know, to purify and things, that all come up. So, you know, it's like, and particularly in a monastic environment. So, yeah, so, it, you know, it had its amazing challenges, but at the same time, it was this process of embracing them and feeling extraordinary growth and personal transformation through doing that. So mm-hmm. yeah, it was an amazing time. So yeah, 2.5 years I was there, and it just kept extending on and on.
So obviously you're not there now. So what made you up and leave?
Yeah, well, my whole thoughts of becoming a monk didn't turn out, and I actually ended up meeting my partner, well, ex-partner now, at that time, and yeah,
was he in your dorm?
He wasn't actually, but we used to meet, you know, for meal times and things, and it was incredibly fiery time because, you know, obviously you're in a very celibate and, you know, disciplined environment. So, but we used to go for walks around the exercise track and things like that, and you know, have chats and things like that.
But so you were dating in a monastery?
Well, yeah, in a very bizarre sort of sense of the word. But ironically, there was actually a lot of couples that sort of got together at that time. It's sort of a quite extraordinary thing.
Were you the only gay couple?
No, there was. Actually, I've got two very good gay lesbian friends, the couples that formed at the same time. They are still together as well.
Wow.
You know, there was a lot of heterosexual couples that got together as well. And the three gay couples powered on. We outlasted them all. So
that's extraordinary, isn't it?
Yeah, so but unfortunately, my relationship ended in December with my partner after 12 years. But we had a beautiful journey, though, together, because really the foundation of our whole relationship was our spirituality and the things that we shared together. And it just came to its natural sort of end. So, you know, these things happen.
And what was the transition like leaving the ashram in India and coming back to Australia together?
It had its challenges for sure because, as I said, when I came back, my whole passion for music and everything had sort of changed. So I was really coming back with a totally clean slate and sort of saying, okay, what now? What is it that I really want to do? What is my calling and all those sort of things? So it was an interesting thing. We looked at different sort of business ventures together and things like that, and nothing really sort of eventuated. You know, we just sort of took a lot of time just settling in, you know, we're just readjusting because it was quite a big adjustment being back in the world, so to speak.
Sure.
But then I got into natural therapies and I did some study with that, and then a whole series of events led me into travel because I've always had a passion for travel and we'd done a lot of travel together. I mean, India was just the start of a love affair with travel that we enjoyed for the next 10 years, actually. We traveled to many parts of the world, and I guess for us our connection was, connecting with the travel and spiritual places and what it was for us.
Fantastic. An amazing story. Now, we're going to take a short break, but we're going to come back and talk about spiritual places and journeys certainly within Australia and New Zealand. If you're listening and you've got a favourite spiritual place, do let us know. We'd love to hear from you. We're talking to Jake about spiritual travel.
Joy 94.9.
And you're on the Spirit Lounge with Joy 94.9. And we've been talking to Jake this evening about his spiritual journey through life, which has been absolutely fascinating. Now, you earn a buck during the day by being a travel counsellor now. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm obviously new to Australia. I haven't travelled around the whole place yet. Where are some of the spiritual... What, Mr. P?
I've lived in Australia my entire life and I still have not made it all the way round yet.
I've probably done more places than you, actually.
I'm pretty sure that you actually have.
Now, where are the key spiritual destinations of Australia then?
Well, I think it's a really personal thing as well. I mean, I think it's, as you were saying, I think a lot of Australians, we tend to always look outside of our own country, but we live in one of the most incredible places on earth. For me, I would say one of the most powerful places that I've been in Australia was definitely out at Uluru and Katachuta. In fact, mm-hmm. the first time I saw Uluru, I actually burst into tears. Mm. It had that sort of profound impact on me, you know, just to fly out there as this desert and desert and desert, all of a sudden you see this massive monolith in the middle of the desert, but to actually be up close to it and to feel its energy. And it's interesting that Andrew said earlier in the show, you know, how destinations for people that may be perceived as spiritual for others may not even know it. And it was interesting, we had some friends from the US come out to visit, and they went to Uluru prior to meeting up with us, and we'd had this amazing profound experience out there, and their whole definition of it was just rip off rock when we caught up with them.
No.
He said all they whinged about was the hotel and how expensive everything was and how expensive the food was, and obviously, you know, you've got a bit of a captive audience out there, because, you know, but you've got to think the expense of getting everything out there as well, you know, so it's sort of one of those things.
Kind of missing the point.
Yeah. And but for me, Uluru and Katajuta, or the Olgas, as it's sort of put in its very Western lay term. But Uluru and Katajuta is really, really profound.
Well,
is it?
I have to agree, because that is one of the places I've been to in Australia. And of course, Uluru is actually lying on its side. Originally, it was upstanding.
Wow.
And once upon a time, millions of years ago, it keeled over. So, yeah, it actually lies on its side. I have been there for, I think, 3 days, 2 nights, and it is one of the most awesome places I have ever visited. Mm. And if you're listening, it doesn't matter whether you're Australian or not. If you've never been to Uluru, go.
Mm.
It is phenomenal. And I would just ask you to promise not to climb it.
Yes, I'm glad you mentioned that.
Yeah. It is a sacred rock. It is incredibly spiritual. Mm. It has incredible spiritual meaning to the Aboriginals. And my heart sank into my boots when I watched certain nations, they shall remain nameless, but you can probably guess, who were clambering up the rock. Mm. And not only is it not politically correct, it is disrespectful to the Aborigines, but also I think something like 40 people a year fall off and die.
Mm, exactly.
So actually, if you value your own safety, please don't do it. But otherwise, yeah, I mean, it's the most incredible place at any time of the day or night.
Mm. And if you're one of the very rare few people to actually get to see it with rain coming down, it's apparently quite special. But and out of Katajuta, there's this amazing part called the Valley of the Winds. There's a walk that you can do, and you literally, you know, clamber over these rocks, and you're literally in this valley that's sort of in the middle of Katajuta, and, you know, these winds literally do come through, and it was the most profound silence and stillness that I'd ever experienced. And obviously, you know, experiencing the sunrise and the sunset out there and all of those things is just beautiful. And there's great things for all budgets. I mean, you can stay out there on a budget right through to the ultimate luxury, which is Longitude 131, where you wake up in the morning in your bed and just press a little button, your blinds come up, and there is Uluru and dining under the stars and all of those amazing things. Mm. So it's got something for everyone, but I would definitely recommend it on the bucket list for everyone. And also from there, you can easily do a bus trip up to Kings Canyon as well, which is a big full day trip, but it's also another really beautiful spot up there.
Now, the Northern Territory is, in terms of spiritual places, is not, it's not just Uluru, is it? There are other places up there?
Far North, yeah, far Northern Territory, absolutely. And you've got, you know, Kakadu and it's that whole period from actually Darwin, you know, right down to Broome, the whole Kimberley coast is just, you know, really, really spectacular. And I guess people could say, well, is it a spiritual? In terms of the Indigenous cultures of Australia, there's pockets all around Australia, obviously, because they were been here for thousands of years and lived in beautiful harmony with nature. And obviously for them, there's, you know, sacred sites all over our great country. And so, you know, obviously, as you were saying with Uluru, to go and respect these places as well. And I think through showing that respect, we can connect into a greater energy that's actually available in each of these places as well.
Are there any over here, kind of Victoria, New South Wales, or any over this side of Australia?
Well, one place that I've really resonated with was in northern New South Wales, around the area of Mount Warning, which is sort of just north of Byron Bay, south of the Gold Coast, New South Wales border. It's where a very popular spot to actually to go up and do a morning hike and see the sunrise. It's where the first rays of sun hit. And that's a really, really beautiful area, a very powerful spot as well. And obviously you've got, you know, Byron Bay and the great communities around there as well. So it's, you know, great sort of beach destination as well as taking in the beauty of that area. And obviously in terms of spa or retreats and things like that these days, I mean, even though you might say there, in terms of people just getting away and retreating and relaxing, there's some amazing retreats and things like that we have in Australia. Up in that Byron hinterland, there's the Gaia retreat, which is really, you know, beautiful, beautiful, quite a high-end, I guess, sort of retreat. And there's Gwingana as well on the Gold Coast hinterland, just over the border as well. So they're places people can really go, and they have packages and things where people are just really de-stress and unwind and connect with their source and do daily yoga and meditation, all those things, really eat really good healthy food and, yeah, just come away with a sense of, you know, renewal and rejuvenated and things like that. So that's...
recharged a bit.
Totally. Yeah, recharge the batteries, which is really important. I think that's the amazing thing about travel. When we get out of our environment and get into somewhere new, in a sense, every place can be spiritual because it's just that sense of reconnecting back to ourselves. And sometimes we just need to get out of our environments to do that. We get, you know, we're at home in the midst of our work and all those sort of things. We can easily get bogged down with so many responsibilities and things like that. And we just slowly start to lose our purpose and our sense. That's why meditation is a great tool, you know, because it brings us back to that.
And I must admit, I love taking holidays in Australia because you reconnect with nature as well. I mean, what I love about this country is just the natural beauty. And for me, that tranquility and that calm is actually just as they say, you know, stop and smell the roses on the way.
But do you think that also a built environment could be a spiritual place for someone?
A built-up environment.
Like a place that we have built.
Well, yeah, like I suppose you've got the Taj Mahal or...
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think anything where we can, you know, we connect in, it's really the intention behind, you know, we're visiting... You mean actual physical structure or you mean like in a city or things like that?
Yeah, like say, for example, if I go to my local church and find it particularly spiritual, is that okay?
Absolutely. Yeah, that's the whole point that you do go, I think, yeah, to... and it's people that, you know, we all resonate, I think, with different paths. And, you know, I think the beautiful thing for me about meditation, it was like it brings that total sense of equality and unity. It's like all religions are one. I mean, we've had spiritual retreats where we've had people from all different religions come, and there's this beautiful sense of solidarity. And that's the true religion, I think. That's it's, you know, how can you have a religion that is discriminating? I mean, it's not a true religion. And that's the beautiful thing that meditation, path of meditation, resonated with me, because everyone's welcome. It doesn't matter about your thoughts or your beliefs or whatever. It's about connecting with the truth of spirit in ourselves, where we're actually all, we are all one consciousness and one supreme power. So, and all of that other stuff, that dross, that discrimination, that separation, all those things just dissolve, because it has no place in true spirituality.
Now, Jake, if people listening tonight would like to talk to you more about maybe planning a retreat or a holiday or a spiritual journey, how do they get hold of you?
Great. Yeah, well, I have a website. It's travelcounsellors.com.au/Jake.Bartlett.
Okay.
And also, everyone, welcome to call me anytime in Melbourne, 9846 4943. It's 9846 4943, and I'd be very happy to chat to anyone about destinations they'd like to go. Yeah, I cover everywhere around the world, but often, you know, we forget how great our own country is and what actually is in our own backyard. So
exactly. It happens to all of us. Yeah. You know. And Andrew, you're right. I've seen more of Australia than I probably have of the UK, you know, but simply because, hey, it's a long way and I'm here.
You've seen more of Australia and more of the UK than I have.
Oh, darling. Well, I'll have to smuggle you in my suitcase.
Do you hear my violins playing background just quietly?
No, they're so small I can't hear them. Now, have we got time for any newsy bits?
We do. I'll give you a minute.
I've got, thank you so much. You can tell who's the boss here, can't you? Now, we have had a bit of a laugh this week, and we have to, there's a couple of stories I'd like to just share, but this one's hilarious. It is entitled, Marry My Daughter and Get $65 Million.
It's like a reverse dowry. I can't imagine anyone would be lining up for that.
This is a smashing story. That I don't know if you've seen it in the press today, but a Hong Kong tycoon is desperate that his daughter should get married. Now, in the meantime, she has run off and married her lover of 7 years, who, of course, is a woman. They got married in France. But this guy, Cecil Chow, who is 76, he's desperate to get his daughter married off, so he's offering $65 million to any man, I assume, who's going to marry his 33-year-old daughter called Gigi. How do you pronounce that?
I would say Gigi. Yeah.
Jiggy Gigi. Just Jiggy Jiggy. Jiggy is a very good woman. Oh, Gigi, sorry, is a very good woman with both talents and good looks, he says. He's trying to sell her. She is devoted to her parents, is generous, and does volunteer work. Of course she does. She doesn't have to work properly if he's got all that money. Anyway, she's run off and married her lover. And despite Hong Kong's traditionally conservative stance on homosexuality, readers of a certain website in Hong Kong have criticised Mr. Chow for his embarrassing and manipulative treatment of his daughter. And she's laughed it off and slightly teasing her father's behaviour, saying the idea of a bounty being offered is quite entertaining.
What a strong woman to be able to do that.
Good on her. Yeah. Good on her.
Good on her.
You go, Gigi. We like you. Come on to the show.
You could do some serious travel with $65 million.
God, couldn't you?
Couldn't you just burn through your whole bucket list in one go?
How many times could you lap the world on $65 million and in total luxury?
Total style, yeah.
You could probably do it on your own yacht, actually, couldn't you? Now, we've got one other little piece of news, because I was very upset to receive the email today, but the gorgeous George Michael has sadly had to axe the Australian leg of his tour. So, we're all getting our money back in November. So if you did buy tickets, you unfortunately are going to get your money back and you're not going to be able to listen to him live. He has to go and have post-traumatic therapy because of the fact he nearly died from pneumonia in Austria back in December, and it's still affecting him. And so he's not coming over here, which is very, very sad. So here is a little track aptly called Heal the Pain.
We're going to finish on that track. That's pretty much all we have time for tonight.
Good. So the priest will be back with us next week. Thank you to Jake for talking about spiritual places.
Thank you. It's been great.
And your journey's been fascinating. We will see you next week on Spirit Lounge. A good night from the Pom.
And the Poof.
And from the priest in absence.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with Joy.